The summer book season has a particular feel, one that is typically filled with beach reads and a return of series and recurring characters. But when temperatures cool down and the smell of autumn arrives, new book choices often lead toward deeper concepts and highbrow literature and huge tomes that look good on the coffee table but are rarely opened. To get ready for some of the most interesting and exciting books of the fall, Steve Goldstein spoke with longtime critic Mark Athatakis, who began by explaining what truly makes the fall book season stand out.
One obvious reason is because it is holiday gift-giving season. So this is where you see not just the fancy coffee table books, but also the big history books, often the big prestige novels that are going to be up for awards in the next year. So it's really kind of a radical shift from summer, which is best known as sort of like the lighter read, the beach read, the summer read. Things are very fluffy. You know, we're starting to get into the doing your homework phase of the reading season.
Well, prestige novels obviously carry a certain cachet, even from the standpoint of authors that people would be most familiar with. Who's the equivalent of that now?
Oh, well, I mean, there's still a lot of those authors are still around. John Irving, for instance, has a 900-page novel called The Last Chairlift that is coming in October. He promises that it is his last large novel, not his last novel, period. But it's very much in keeping. If you're a fan of John Irving and The World According to Garp, it's very much, you know, there's a lot of wrestling involved and there's a lot of coming of age. He's still around and doing great work. Barbara Kingsolver, who spent 20 years, I believe, in Tucson, has another large novel of her own called Demon Copperhead, which takes the Charles Dickens's David Copperfield story and transports it to Appalachia in the present day to kind of suggest that some of the issues that Dickens was writing about in, you know, the 1800s haven't really changed a whole lot. Those prestige authors of maybe a generation or so ago are still around and still working.
You mentioned coffee table books, and to make a dated reference because of my age range, it's not a coffee table book about coffee tables like Kramer on Seinfeld. So, but what are some coffee table books you're excited about?
Well, I think one prominent one that I think might be of interest, especially for locals, is Linda Ronstadt has a book that is coming out in October that is called Feels Like Home, A Song for the Sonoran Borderlands. And it's not a tell-all book about the music industry. It's not even really a autobiography as such, but it's a photo book, has recipes. It's her getting in touch with her Mexican roots and her Mexican heritage. Her family obviously was very prominent in Tucson. They ran one of the biggest retailers, I believe, in the city. And so she's trying to access her being a product of that family. And she includes a lot of letters, kind of a lot of reminiscences about various relatives of hers. So, it's a very sweethearted book. It's definitely worth reading, but it's also one of those books that's designed to be very easily flipped through. There are some beautiful, beautiful photographs of the border landscape as well. So, it hits a lot of sweet spots for, you know, what is kind of like the perfect coffee table book.
I think we hear this more commonly because the average person will see more about film criticism, for example. And they'll say, now, wait a second. Does this critic like this film just because it's different and they have to see everything, so it's nice to see something different? Do you find yourself able to go in with a fresh mind when you read?
I try to. And speaking of film criticism, I mean, one of the writers I really admired growing up was Roger Ebert. And I think Roger Ebert was what made him a great critic was that he was sort of game for anything. So, here's a movie about dogs and cats in space. It's like, and he is not going to necessarily dismiss this out of hand. It's like, okay, well, what are you going to do with this concept of dogs and cats in space? And maybe there's not a whole lot to be done. But I think his approach to it was to try to meet something on its own terms. He realizes that he wasn't going to be watching a Fellini movie, but if it is good on the terms that the movie sets for itself, then fine. He's perfectly willing to admire it. And I feel much the same way it's not that I hold thrillers to a lower standard than, say, a Cormac McCarthy novel, but part of the critic's job is to understand and appreciate what the writer is trying to do, not trying to criticize it, as Updike said, for what it did not even attempt.
Any fiction that is around the pandemic or what we've learned or what could be next and not from a sci-fi standpoint, even a novel standpoint.
I think what's been happening, honestly, is I think a lot of writers, maybe part of the reason these books are so big is because they've been so housebound for the past a couple of years. Right. I think that, maybe if you don't have a pandemic, you don't have Barbara Kingsolver thinking, it's like, boy, David Copperfield, let's go ahead and take a 600-page novel and see what we can, redo with that. Maybe John Irving has a little less time on his hands. But I think that, the pandemic novels that come out, Gary Steingart had one that came out last year. I think maybe a lot of those writers kind of got them out of their system in the first year. And I think, maybe there's a sense of, I think a lot of fiction writers maybe don't necessarily feel like it's their job to be timely in an on-the-nose sort of way to say that if you don't, you're dealing with a pandemic, then you have to write a novel that is specifically about the pandemic. I think that maybe there are certain writers who look at this age and think about sort of the anxiety that it causes, or talks about the concerns that, you know, climate change in addition to the sort of kind of social anxiety and social chaos that comes with the pandemic. How do those things go together? So, and I think one novel that, you know, it's not a pandemic novel, but I kind of think about it as a novel that sort of comes out of this current moment is Lydia Millett, who is a Tucson-based writer. And she's written close to a dozen works of fiction, and she's been a finalist for the National Book Award. She's been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. But she's never written directly about Arizona, which is where she spent a good time of her life. But she has a novel that is coming out in October that is called Dinosaurs. And it is about a man who has walked all the way from New York to Arizona because he was enchanted by some drone footage that he saw of Phoenix, and moves into one of those mountain areas where he slowly becomes entangled with the not just the wildlife, but also the quote-unquote wildlife of the family that is living next door. So it's dealing a lot with that sort of what do we owe to each other? How are we going to live next to each other when we are living cheek to jowl with other people's anxieties and concerns and fears, especially when you have this big glass window where you can really see what's going on in other people's lives. And I think that's maybe a little bit of a metaphor of how much we've been exposed to other people's ideas and other people's thinking in the past couple of years.
I know this may be more of a summer question, but any series, any returning characters that people should be excited about?
Well, one book that is coming out shortly is a sequel to the book Less by Andrew Sean Greer, which came out a few years ago and won the Pulitzer Prize, and kind of surprisingly won the Pulitzer Prize because it is a funny book, and funny books, and I've served on prize juries. Funny books have a little bit of a rough road with prize juries because I think everybody has a different kind of sense of humor. But I think Andrew Sean Greer's Less got over just because, you know, partly because it's about a writer. It's about a 50-something gay mid-list writer who has not been terribly successful, a little bit anxious about that, and goes on this around-the-world tour in order to kind of find himself. So very madcap storytelling. And the sequel to that is coming out next month. It's called Less is Lost. And instead of going on a trip around the world, the writer is going on a trip around the United States. So it's kind of a how we live now story, but also just, you know, very arch, very funny, sort of a Don Quixote tale that is sort of like, you know, repurposed for the current moment.
Okay. Mark Athatakis, thank you.
Thank you.